Welcome in to Chiefs Central here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Obrisco. Tonight we have no practice from this morning. No Chiefs players that spoke this morning. You know what else we have none of? No problem. Because we have something very special for you here tonight, because Seth Kizer of The Athletic was in studio with me back on Wednesday, and I wanted to bring a little bit of that flavor over here to Sports Radio 810. He's on the Wednesday over on ESPN Kansas City. Everybody drink. And we have Seth Kizer, his chiefiest Chiefs talk. He was in for an hour. We talked about a whole bunch of things, including the freedom of taking a road trip when someone else around you can drive that you trust enough to take a nap while they're driving. And sorry, girlfriend Renee showed up and we let her in the studio today. And then so she waited until the show had started to open the loudest Coke can of all time. So just try to ignore her as much as I'll be trying to do for the next several minutes. She was in here for the last hour and waited until that moment to crack the can open. Rudy Salazar is here, and he kept me from actually just soldiering on past that because of the face that he was making.
It was just so loud.
It was so loud. I even gave Renee a pair of headphones in hopes that she would generally respect the radio show going on around her. And you knew we were live, right? Just a thumbs up, thumbs down. She knew we were live. Yeah, she knew we were live, and you cracked it open anyway.
When I heard it, like, you know, like, what was going through my head, because I said
yep.
It. Like, that's the first thing I thought of, but with, like, an apple, and it just, I just couldn't help it.
So that's how we start this show tonight here on Sports Radio 810. The other thing that we can talk about, unless anybody else needs any cans opened. No? No one else in here? Okay. Rudy, you got a can over there you can open up? Yeah, it's open already. Oh, you opened your drink before the show and not into a microphone? Very cool. Oh, man. The other thing that we can talk about that I was planning on talking about today was the Hall of Fame game last night. Not to talk about the Hall of Fame game because nobody cares, but because of some things that we saw in the Hall of Fame game last night. That's where I would like to start the show, unless anybody would like to crack open a Red Bull. So last night in the Hall of Fame game, what was that, Rudy? It's a bag of gummy bears.
Gummy bears.
Rudy just crinkled a bag of gummy bears into the microphone. Very good. I feel attacked. So, during the Hall of Fame game last night, we were gifted with a beautiful half from Chase Daniel and another beautiful half from Tyler Bray, because the Chicago Bears and Matt Nagy have put together an all-star cast of quarterbacks. That was extremely exciting. But on the other hand, we saw the new helmet rule finally put into place. And I've talked about that over here on this show a little bit, over on ESPN Kansas City a bunch. And when I was in St. Joe last weekend, Bill Vinovich and his crew of refs came in to sort of explain that rule to us a little bit more. Got to ask some questions, and I had a few that, a couple that he answered a little bit, and a couple that he couldn't answer based on some metrics from last year and stuff. But it made me feel like I have a pretty good understanding, certainly a better than average understanding of where this rule's coming from. And I'm feeling pretty good about that because an NFL referee taught it to me. So theoretically, I know how this works. And so with all of that, honestly, I don't mind the rule as it exists. Also, the purpose of the rule, I think, is totally defendable. Both for the health of the sport and for the health of individual players, it makes sense to try to have less guys leading with the top of their heads and increasing concussion risk, increasing spinal injury risk. You don't want to see another paralyzation laying out on the turf. That's all totally understandable, totally reasonable. And I think it will long-term be good for the game. And obviously good for the players. The thing that I am really worried about, though, isn't that they're going to call hits that are now illegal. Honestly, as the game evolves, we'll get used to it. My concern isn't even really that they're going to start doing that too liberally. They're going to start calling those too liberally. Because even then, you know, if it's a front of the helmet more than the crown of the helmet and it draws a flag, it will be bad. We will say bad things about it on Twitter. And I think ultimately we'll be okay. And twice last night during the Hall of Fame game, you've got the former. You got two good calls that were penalties within the new rule. I think one of them may even have been a penalty last year. But you got to see the new rule put into place, use of the helmet, that's a penalty now, move on to your next thing. The thing that I am really worried about is if it's going to make the safety position a myth from a previous bygone era, not because of the penalties, but because of the calls that are made, that are called to be penalties that shouldn't have been even under the new rule. That also happened twice last night. So twice last night, we saw the rule called accurately, and twice we saw it called frivolously. It was a hard hit, you know, from a shoulder into a guy's chest. That happens. And then someone also had tweeted that the refs clarified to say that one was actually a defenseless receiver play. And that one's really hard to deal with because if that hit isn't made, then the receiver catches a touchdown. You make that hit that is in no way, shape, or form using your helmet or anyone else's helmet. And you put a shoulder into a chest and then break up the pass. Great defensive play. Wait a second, there's a flag. Those are the plays that worry me. And then calling helmet to helmet, or not even helmet to helmet. That's not the rule anymore. The rule is helmet to anything. Calling crown of the helmet to anything whenever it doesn't actually happen on the field. That's where my long-term concern for the game is. Also, Vinovich copped to this whenever he was talking to us. He said that referees are told to call more of these fouls in the preseason. And that in the preseason, you call them, again, you call them more liberally. Things that look like fouls you call, and then once the regular season comes around, you hopefully calibrated what you need to call accurately enough. And then my assumption would be once the regular season actually gets here, you start passing on some of those calls in general. And if that's the way that all this unfolds, then it'll be okay. I think. If it ends up being an undiscernible mess of things that used to be illegal hits and things that are now illegal hits and things that were never illegal hits, and it's a helmet and then it's a shoulder and then it's a shoulder to the helmet and then it's an offensive player's helmet to a defender's chest and then it's a defender's shoulder to an offensive player's chest, but he's in the air because he's going to catch a touchdown, but you break off the pass. Somewhere in that labyrinth of lines in a rule book, of here's what this is, and here's what this is, and here's what should be called, here's what shouldn't be. That's where I think it's going to get muddy. My hope is that whenever the actual season gets here, we will see less of that. That we will see less of the things that exist on the margins. I guess that's what I should say. If it is a helmet, crown of the helmet hit to anybody is anything, it's a flag. Helmet to helmet, basically of any sort, it's a flag. Hitting a defenseless receiver with your helmet, it's going to be a flag. But the things in the margins where it's, oh man, is that a shoulder or a head? Was that the crown or the forehead? Those are the ones that they need to call as infrequently as possible, honestly. And if they miss some of those, it's going to be okay. I don't think anyone's going to blame them. if there's a hit that they look on replay and they go, oh, you know what, that was more of the crown of the helmet than the nose bumper. That probably should have been a foul. Oh, here's the next play, because we're all moving on. Or, you know what, that was a little bit of helmet, a little bit on top of the head, but he was really leading with his shoulder, and his helmet just kind of got caught up in the angle. I think everybody's going to move on. I think it's okay. I think we'll all be okay with it if it evolves in that direction. And eventually, the NFL's not dumb. I thought that Mike Greenberg had a really good point a couple days ago. Actually, hey, Rudy, can you go dig through my folder really quick? There's a clip in there from Mike Greenberg on Get Up a couple days ago. Should be in my normal folder. Just my good old name on it. And it was a perspective that I thought was really worthwhile. And this comes into play not even in the initial conversation, but in the conversation from last night and how this evolves from the preseason and the regular season. This isn't something the NFL wanted to do to itself. This is something that the NFL, for all of its mistakes, and man, there have been many, the NFL screws up the anthem, and they screw up Kaepernick, and they screw up rules all the time. They screw up a catch and unnecessary roughness, and they screw... There are many mistakes the NFL has made. But the only thing that fuels the NFL is self-preservation. It's self-preservation the whole way through. And the self-preservation of this move is because they believe that it's going to help the game long-term. Here, really quick, is Mike Greenberg talking about this on Get Up on ESPN a couple days ago. I don't quote him frequently. I don't catch Get Up frequently. Thought this was a really good point.
Everyone is going to yell and scream, oh, you can't do this, and the players can't adjust, and it's unfair and all of that. But just stop for a moment and consider why they're doing this. You heard me in the little wake up there, a little open that we do, saying the game as it is currently being played is not sustainable long term. It's not my opinion. I'm not telling you I think that. They're telling you that. This is why they're doing this. They don't want to take this out of football. They used to sell DVDs with pictures of the video of the biggest hits. That was a big part of the selling of the game. They're taking this out of the sport because they have no choice. So if players are upset about it, they're going to have to adjust. Because the reality is the people who run the National Football League are telling you with their actions. They're not going to say this in words, but they're telling you with their actions. We cannot go on this way. And so, A, I understand why they're doing it. And B, if you consider what that means, it is actually a very profound thing. It is a genuine concern for pro football, and they have to make these changes.
I think that's really well said. I think he's dead on. These are changes they feel they have to make. And so the refs aren't out there throwing flags at plays we used to love for the fun of it. This is done purposefully with, I'm sure, great thought and care and mental math of, is this good for the game or bad for it? How will we work our way around it? I don't think this is made hastily. I have my many concerns. I've just laid them all out there for you. But my thought right now is that ultimately this will be good for the game of football and good for the health of the players playing it. I hope that the fringe things aren't called like crazy whenever the season actually gets here. That's my concern. What happens with the fringe stuff? That was very national, not very Chiefy. We will amend that coming up next year on Chief Central. I'm Josh Briscoe. Rudy Salazar is running the whole show. Whenever we come back, Seth Kizer of The Athletic joined me over on ESPN Kansas City on Wednesday to talk about several things, specifically the pitch for the Air Read offense. I promise it's as fun as it sounds. You'll hear that next. Welcome back to Chief Central here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Josh Briscoe. Seth Kizer of The Athletic has been on my show over on ESPN Kansas City many times. But Wednesday was a very special day because he, from Minnesota, he's on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan. He was on, he was in town for training camp. He drove into St. Joe, and then he drove down here to hang out with us on ESPN Kansas City and over here with Kevin on Sports Radio 810. And One of his most interesting works so far on The Athletic, which is absolutely worth your money in case you're still, for some reason, trying to decide, do the mental math, both for him and for literally everybody else locally who works for The Athletic. It's just a whole array of brilliant writers. He wrote this article about the air read offense as opposed to the air raid. The headline is simply, "An argument for the Chiefs converting to a pass-heavy offense to the extent the NFL has never seen." And throughout our conversation that you'll hear here, it takes a shot at some conventional wisdom. He puts the metrics in some really interesting perspectives. And we take a look at the Chiefs personnel to get to the heart of why this makes so much sense for the Kansas City Chiefs. So here is Seth Kizer. And if you want to hear the whole conversation, go look at the podcasts. Search Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your shows. And we have an hour-long conversation where we touch on many, many things. Everything from a bunch of football stuff you'll hear tonight. And road trip tips and being in St. Joe. And also the fact that I robbed him while he was here for $25 worth of barbecue unknowingly. All those stories await you in the podcast. But if you just want that Chief stuff, don't go anywhere. This is the place for it. So Seth started the football portion of our conversation when we started talking about his plea for the air raid offense. Excuse me. No, not the air raid offense. A Freudian slip. No KU football talk here. Not the air raid offense. When Seth started talking about his plea for the air read offense.
So here is a fact. It is more efficient in terms of gaining yards, which is the point of being on offense, mm-hmm. is to gain yards. And one of the points to score touchdowns, which you have to gain yards to do. The point is to gain yards. It is significantly more efficient to pass the ball than to run the ball. It's not even close. For the Chiefs last year, I believe the difference was 2.5 yards. Is the difference between yards per attempt and then yards per carry. And people might say, well, what about yards lost to sacks? That's balanced out by the fact that the quarterback running, which is added to yards per carry,
right?
It boosts the yards per carry by, like, you know, because, you know, Alex Smith averaged like 6 yards per carry.
Right, sure.
As opposed to 4.5. And so the difference of 2.5 yards per carry is the equivalent of the difference between Jamal Charles and Nile Davis. That's the difference. And so when
heart hurts, I don't know if it's the barbecue or what you just said, but I have a heart pain.
And so what happens is people are resistant to the idea, well, no, you got to run the ball. But if someone were resistant to the idea of giving the ball to Jamal Charles 80% of the time,
right.
Everyone would be like, well, you'd be crazy not to.
Right.
But yet for some reason people think you need to run the ball half the time, and that's just not true. And so what I did is I took a look at some of the statistics that are out there in terms of running the ball. And no matter what you do, Football Outsiders, Ben Baldwin, who's another great athletic contributor,
mm-hmm.
I think with the Seattle group, he wrote an incredible article on Football Outsiders that proved there's no numerical proof that running the ball well or running the ball often sets up play action.
Okay, that was my first question.
It's a myth. Hmm. It's what we think because intuitively it makes sense, but there's no correlation there in the numbers. There's no correlation between running the ball and winning. Like people
right.
always say, well, that's just because people run the clock out by running the ball. And that's when running the ball becomes important, for sure.
Sure.
You know, in the fourth quarter to run the game out. But the reality is it's significantly more efficient to pass than to run. And part of that is the rule changes that we've seen now. Gone are the days where you're worried about John Lynch taking someone's head off.
Right.
Gone are the days where corners can maul guys all the way down the field. It's easier than it's ever been, and it's going to get even easier
yes.
this year. The catch rule is more in favor of receivers now.
Yes.
And they've talked about, well, we're going to be even more careful with pass interference.
Yep. Point of emphasis.
Yeah, that's awesome for certain teams.
Right.
And so here's my argument. With how much more efficient it is to pass the ball than to run the ball, some of the best offenses in the NFL, in fact, most of them last year, if you look at the numbers, virtually all of them, were pass-heavy teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got to be careful. If you've got a mediocre quarterback or a bad quarterback, you can't do this.
Sure.
Because that'll just expose him. But if your quarterback is even decent and your scheme is good, you're going to be more efficient passing the ball. And what I'm curious, I would love to see someone try. What if they were to, you know, with context and situation in mind, you know, first and goal at the one, you know, maybe just run the ball in.
Right.
You know, or, you know, it's the fourth quarter and you're up by 3 touchdowns, things like that.
Sure.
However, outside of that, unless you have a numerical a personnel or a schematic advantage. I would love to see them call a pass play, and I know there's a college coach who does this, and this is a bit of an exaggeration, but not by too much. Mm-hmm. It would be really cool to see a game where they called a pass play every play and waited till they got to the line of scrimmage, and then they would have a couple kill options where if Mahomes said, well, they've only got three guys in the box.
Right.
So, we'll yeah, sure, I'll audible into a run. Kareem, you pick up five easy yards,
yep,
and then we'll rinse and repeat. I'm not sure that that would be incredibly successful. Now, again, that's a bit hyperbolic. You probably, or hyperbolic. Anyway, either
I
way.
I think it's hyperbolic.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways.
I don't think, I think you just heard yourself just, I've this, been doing this happened this to twice you all, now today.
I've been doing this to you all day. you can't quite get to that point. But if the Chiefs started throwing the ball 75% of the time, mm-hmm, I wouldn't be upset. Because the reality is, no team has hit the limit to where that efficiency, to where you start getting diminished returns. The closest thing we've seen to it before the recent years was the run-and-shoot offense with the Oilers, mm-hmm, back in the early 90s. And the reason they lost in the playoffs is, one, they ran into a great Bills team.
Mm-hmm.
And two, their defense was terrible.
Right.
But the NFL and media, they killed the run-and-shoot system. Well, it must be their fault, so they scrapped it, and then they sucked for like 15 years.
Right.
And so I would just love to see that. And statistically, if you look at it, there's no reason the Chiefs wouldn't be able to make that work. Last year, they were much more efficient throwing the ball. Well, and then people say, well, what about picks? If you look at the top five teams throwing the ball last year who threw the ball the most, right, none of them were in the top five in picks. There's more of a correlation between your quarterback,
right,
and number of picks, not right, the number of times you throw the ball. If you've got right, a bad quarterback, you're going to throw a lot of picks.
Sure.
And so that'll balance out. Maybe you throw two or three more picks in the season. But if you're gaining an extra 2 yards per play, that more than balances out. And I would argue, to, I guess, sum up, now that I've been pontificating for it feels like an hour.
It's great.
I would argue that the Chiefs are uniquely suited to try something like this because they have Tyreek Hill, because they have Sammy Watkins, because they have Travis Kelce. And even if, you know, to a lesser extent, they've got some solid role player types like Chris Conley or DeMarcus Robinson. They've got a bunch of weapons out of the backfield. They are built to sling the ball 50 times a game and yep, just what? Let's see what happens. Okay, teams will compensate after a few games. Well, then you have a couple games where you're audibling to Kareem Hunt running the ball 30 times and you run all over them.
Yes.
And if nothing else, that would be fun.
It would be a blast. And I think what you just touched on there is the thing I'm seeing. And there are a couple of different comments about how, you know, you can't do nothing but you can't do nothing but pass because eventually teams will just start defending the pass. But as soon as there are four guys in the box,
yes,
Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid aren't stupid.
Exactly.
Kareem Hunt comes back into
the slot.
Here's
a great example for this. Everyone remembers Kareem Hunt's final carry of the year, right? 35-yard touchdown against the Broncos week 17. Took the rushing title with it.
Yes.
Look at the formation they were in, and I wrote about this in the article here. If you look at the formation they were in, they started off that formation in a spread offense with five wide receivers. One of them was Kareem Hunt, so technically five receivers. One of them was a running back. And Mahomes stepped to the line. He looked at the defense. He looked at the personnel the Broncos had. They only had one run stopper out on the field, period.
Mm-hmm.
And they were way spread out, and he motioned for Hunt to come back. And they handed the ball off, and because they had a personnel advantage, because personnel matters, not just
yes,
how many guys you have in the box.
So much.
We saw that with Daniel Sorensen and that kind of thing. The type of players you have in the box matter, too.
Yes.
And so what you saw with that, he had a natural advantage, and one missed tackle later, 35 yards to the house. So I'm not saying never run the ball. I'm saying only run the ball when there's a natural advantage, and that natural advantage can be set up by passing. I'm saying pass to set up the run.
Yes.
Because the traditional wisdom of run to set up the pass, it's just not statistically evident. There's no numbers to back it up. And I have yet to have anyone who says, well, you can't do that. I say, well, why? And no one has an answer for
right,
me. And I've talked to a bunch of analysts about this, and every one of them saying the same thing. Eventually, there's going to be an NFL team that throws the ball 75% of the time.
And people have gotten on Andy Reid in years past for throwing it too often. This feels like one of those times when you can kind of put together a Madden strategy that maybe Andy Reid is, maybe you're the team we're talking about actually can pull it off.
And I think maybe could. And the thing with Reid isn't necessarily just the and I learned this the hard way. It's not just the amount that he throws. With Reid, it's more a timing thing. And his biggest weakness to me, it's not that he throws too much. It's that when things start going wrong, he starts to take too much control over the offense, which hopefully you can address with Pat Mahomes.
Yes.
And so I could see it working. Again, you can't take it to its full extreme. So anyone who thinks I'm saying literally never run, that's not the case. But run when you have the schematic advantage. Because I think, because those run and shoot offenses, they ran the ball very well.
Yes. On the point about the formations and the people in the box and everything, mm-hmm. I saw some GIFs earlier today of the Denver Broncos last year. Someone put a whole thread together times when the Broncos were running with nine guys in the box against them.
Yep.
Having that little faith in any aspect of your offense is insane to me.
Yeah.
And they had it last year. And that's one reason that I guess Case Keenum makes some sense that we can at least throw it whenever there are nine guys in the box. But I think that's an underrated part of all this stuff that you're talking about. If eventually a defense overcompensates because they feel like you're throwing it too much, or they do it all the time, feel like they're running too much, then you got to be able to go the other direction.
Right. And that's the exact point. It's not about only passing or only running. It's about doing the most efficient thing to move the ball. And with the Chiefs' personnel, with the Chiefs' situation, with their coach, I would argue the most efficient thing they can do is throw the ball. And they've proven that. And then when teams, you know, start to back off and switch out personnel, and they will.
Yes, of course.
That's where you let Kareem Hunt go to work against one-on-one matchups or Spencer Ware, and he will. And you'll have success. And I would love to see them try that. Plus, wouldn't it be fun? We saw Andy Reid last year be on the cutting edge of some developments in terms of incorporating college-type scheme and college-type concepts. It would be awesome to see him on the cutting edge of something again this year. That would be so much fun to watch. And, I mean, what's the worst-case scenario? You have to revert to what you normally do?
Right.
Oh, no. You
right.
know how to do that already.
That's my conversation with Seth Kizer, a piece of it from Wednesday over on Almost Entirely Sports and ESPN Kansas City. If that doesn't make you think, if that doesn't get your brain jogging a little bit, nothing is ever going to, right? Like, I hear that and I'm shook. He mentioned it in this conversation, but I want to read you one paragraph from his article on The Athletic. You're going to have to pay for the rest of it. And you should. It's worth it. He's great. Nate's great. Rustin Dodd covering the Royals is great. But Seth wrote, "The reality is that in the modern NFL, passing the ball is markedly more efficient than running the ball." Again, he mentioned this and even said this stat in that clip just there, but for emphasis, it's not even close. Last season, the average passing play outgained the average rushing play by 2.1 yards, 6.2 to 4.1. In other words, running the ball is 66.1% as effective in gaining yardage as passing the ball. It's not even close. For frame of reference, that's about the difference between handing the ball off to Jamaal Charles and his 5.4 yards per carry in his career versus Nile Davis and his 3.2 yards per carry. So the difference right now in the NFL in passing the ball versus running the ball is the difference between Jamaal Charles and Nile Davis. That matters! That's useful. And so some people may say, well, you got to be able to run the ball so you can set up the pass, and pass the ball so you can set up the run. You got to, what about RPOs? Teams are never going to respect the RPOs. About 42% of the time last year, teams were running the football. If you run the ball 25% of the time, 1-4. I'll just make it 1-4. That's my number, not Seth's. Just let's say 1-4. And that fourth time is because the opposing team has put four guys in the box. Then you're going to go ahead and pick up that Jamaal Charles yardage on the ground. But make teams sell out. The NFL, the conventional wisdom in the NFL used to be, hey, you want to win? Sell out to stop the run, or else we're going to run it down your throat. Sell out to stop the run, or else we're going to run it down your throat. That's not this league anymore. In fact, this league is the total inverse. Hey, sell out to stop the pass, or else we're going to just toss it up over your head and you're going to look like a fool. Hey, sell out to make sure that Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, I don't know, just on a brisk jog downfield, don't burn all of you collectively at one moment. Sell out to stop that. That's why the Chiefs are uniquely positioned to do this. Sell out to stop those guys. If you won't, over the top, crossing route, post route, whatever. We got options. Sell out to stop it. And then what happens whenever they do still have to stop it? Well, it's not even as hard as taking a unconfident quarterback whenever you're the Jags, right? The Jags are saying, hey, still have to stop the run. And whenever you do, we'll let Blake Bortles try to throw it over your defense. Take the better average yards per play setup, and they will have to respect the run. Because the second that they don't, Kareem Hunt put it in his gut, splits the guard and tackle, 7 yards. Or maybe 70 yards. Maybe 27 yards. But it's sure as hell not going to be a 3-yard cloud of smoke. It's going to be above average every time. The average rushing play last year was 4.1 yards gained by the offense. Well, if you're picking up anything like 6 yards per passing play, and then the only times you feel the need to be forced to run the ball is whenever they got 5 guys in the box, couple down linemen, 3 backers, 3 down linemen, couple backers, nothing but, defensive backs everywhere else. If you decide to run the ball when there are 4 or 5 guys in the box, and that's your timing, then you're going to steamroll past 4.1 yards per carry on the ground. You got to have a competent quarterback, a guy who can actually force the hand here. And maybe the logic in years past has been that it's easier to find a running back that can do that than to find a quarterback that can do it. But it is more efficient and more useful for a team to do it by throwing the ball than it is by running the ball. So, do it. Can you even imagine? Like, think about how silly it would be to go draft Patrick Mahomes, to have drafted Tyreek Hill, to be paying Travis Kelce, and to have gone out and given a butt ton of money to Sammy Watkins in free agency, and then say that you're going to run the ball half the time. What a waste! So you're having a finite amount of income. You buy a car, and then you have a car that you are ready to use. You trade up for it, and you trick it out, right? You trade up for your car. That's the thing that we're doing now. And you give it a, what is it? What is it like? I've never seen any of the Fast and Furious movies. Is it like a NOx tank? What's the turbo tank?
Nitrous.
Nitrous tank. Thank you, Rudy.
See. It says, like, NOS on them because it's nitrous oxide, but it's nitrous.
Perfect. So you trade up for your car. You invest in one of those tanks. You get the underglow. Trick out the sound system. You invest in this car. You have the heated steering wheel. Everything about this car is killing it right now. You've invested a ton in it. And then you take your bike to work every day. Or, you know, no, let's be fair. And you take your bike to work 42.2% of the time, which is how often the average NFL team runs the football. What are you doing? Like, I would hope that every single person in your life would be, hey, man, why aren't you driving the car every time? Why are you only driving your pride and joy here? Why are you only driving this car to work 58% of the time? Oh, well, because I got to ride the bike, so I appreciate the car more. Nah, man, your car's in the garage. Drive that thing. That's where I'm at with this air raid offense and why I am totally in. And you know what? With all those weapons installed on this Patrick Mahomes-based car, in this analogy, and with Andy Reid being the guy that's right there ready to drive it, I think there's a chance we're going to see a version of this. I don't know if we're going to see 75% passes, but maybe we see a little more than we've seen in years past. Andy likes to throw the ball. He gets it. Now he has the tools to pull it off. You're listening to Chiefs Central here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe. Rudy Salazar is here explaining the Fast and Furious movies to me. I sound 9,000 years old. I'm actually 14. It's really incredible. My beard is also only impressive for a 14-year-old. But I have it. We're a little bit more from Seth Kaiser of The Athletic whenever we come back in just a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sports Radio 810. Welcome back in the Chiefs Central here on Sports Radio 810. We're here every weekday night throughout training camp. I don't know what exactly how many days that goes. We're here all next week also. We're off the next couple days. Rudy supposes that August 15th is into camp. That feels about right. So we've got a couple weeks here with you. Still, I've enjoyed being able to do these Chiefs talk shows every night over here on the 810 side of things. If you're enjoying any of it, please join us over on ESPN Kansas City. I'm over there. Yeah, drink. Rudy took a drink already. Go ahead. Get ahead of it. Come over to ESPN Kansas City for almost entirely sports from 4 to 6 p.m. every weekday. Or, if you're busy, listening to Kevin. I don't blame you. We're on the same time. Listen, you got to pick a favorite child. I don't mind being the second favorite child. I really don't. Ask my mom. I'm sorry, Mom. That was unfair. Third favorite child. But if you need to pick your favorite child and then your second favorite child gets just a podcast download, that is plenty good for me. So you can search Almost Entirely Sports wherever it is that you get your podcasts, and hopefully you can enjoy that. We're also on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page if you want to pop in, whatever, on Kevin's commercial breaks. We are not needy. We just need to know that you've been there. So come by, give us a thumbs up or a podcast download and see if you like it. I hope you do, and if not, can't win them all, I guess. But another good time over here on Chiefs Central. We'll be back over here again on Monday. But tonight we have a little while longer, and I want to give you a few more things that Seth Kizer said over on the aforementioned Almost Entirely Sports. He's done a couple film reviews in these last couple of days, last week or so, on Travis Kelce and also on Tyreek Hill. And first, between those two reviews, I asked him to talk a little bit about Travis Kelce and how he is such a special player on this Chiefs offense.
Travis Kelce is good at literally everything.
Right.
In terms
of, it's incredible.
I mean, I don't know what his singing voice is like. It wouldn't surprise me if it were good.
I feel like he could probably sing.
On the football field, he does everything in terms of getting open. And so that was an article I wrote, just what makes him impossible to cover. I have reviewed all kinds of receivers. I've reviewed some of Antonio Brown's snaps to get a feeling for what the very best looked like. I would put Travis Kelce right up there with Jones, with Brown, with Odell in terms of guys who can't be covered one-on-one. Doesn't matter the player, doesn't matter who it is. When he man coverage and they don't have help, he wins. It's almost, and I didn't chart, maybe I should have. I would say he probably wins when it's man situation. He wins 75-80% of the time. It's obscene.
Yes, it's unbelievable.
And the thing is he can do everything. He's got incredible athleticism. He's got great deep speed, so he can run past corners. So they have to respect that. But he's also got exceptional quickness. He's also got incredible strength and technique against the press. And he has developed into one of the very best route runners at his position in the NFL. And so there's just, no matter what you try to do, you cannot account for it. And that was one of the most fun articles I've written all year, just because I included, I mean, I couldn't stop. It was like video clip after video clip.
Yes.
I'm like, I kept watching. I mean, what he did to Byron Jones, who was a safety last year but is a corner this year, because he's considered, when he came into the league, he was considered like the Gronk stopper.
Right.
He was the prototype. And Kelce just abused him. And I had a clip of that. He abused him with a little route there in the end zone. I call it maybe a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just brutal, and it showed how he puts everything together. He cannot be covered. So, I mean, I think for all we hear about Watkins, for all we hear about Hill and Mahomes, yeah, I would be surprised if Kelce weren't still maybe the main centerpiece of the offense, because it wouldn't surprise me if he were still the best player on the offense, which he has been the last few years.
I think you're right on that, and I want to sort of take that opportunity to talk about what you read about Tyreek Hill as well.
Yes.
But my hunch is that you're right, that he is the best player on this offense,
mm-hmm.
and he's also the most unique player on this offense.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, even Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, I think you could say, do some of the same things well, differently, yeah. but they're more similar than anyone on the planet is to Travis Kelce, other than Gronk, who is not on the team currently.
Right, and here's what I would say. I don't think Gronk is worse than Travis Kelce. I don't know of the two of them who's better, who's worse. It depends on who you ask.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gronk, because he's a superior blocker, probably gets the edge. But they're very different players.
Sure.
I don't think there's anyone who plays the position the way Kelce does.
Because
Gronk is, I mean, he runs great routes, but he runs different routes.
Yes.
He's not doing the same things. They're not asking him to run the same type of routes. Kelce, you see, like, in the top 100 when corners are talking about, they say he runs routes like a wide receiver.
Right.
And it's absurd to watch.
It's absurd.
He is genuinely unique in a league that's full of freaks.
Yes.
He is one of the freakiest, I guess.
Yes. I guess, and I haven't watched enough of Gronk to be able to say this completely factually, but my feeling is if there was anybody on the planet you wanted to make sure, if you needed to get 6 yards on a play and you could have one person to throw the ball to, you probably take Gronk because I feel like that's unstoppable.
Yeah.
But with Travis Kelce, you're right. I mean, he's a threat at every level on the field, which I don't know that anyone is other than maybe Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, Julio Jones type of guys, and those are all receivers.
Right, and Kelce's a guy, I mean, he's a tight end that you throw bubble screens to.
Oh, yes, you're right.
These things are absurd that he can do, and I'm excited. Every year he's gotten better.
Yep.
And I feel like he's probably reached the ceiling. But who knows? I guess we'll find out this year. I'm telling you, Air Reid, let's just run 4 verts every down.
Yes!
What's the worst that could happen?
Yes! 0-16.
Yeah, that is the worst that could happen.
They wouldn't go, they would not go 0-16 if they ran 4 verts every play.
Yeah, wouldn't it be interesting to have a year in which your quarterback threw for 78 touchdowns and 50 interceptions?
Yes!
If nothing else, it would be entertaining.
That's me and Seth Kaiser talking on Wednesday about Travis Kelce. He also did a piece on Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs' evolving offense, what makes Hill so explosive, how his development is coming along, what he can and can't do well, and again, how this Chiefs' offense comes together.
With Tyreek Hill, so I did his film review. He was one of the last guys, him and Travis Kelce's film review I wanted to do, because with Hill, he has kind of a similar thing happen to him, and I've talked about this in terms of with Mahomes, where you have this singular trait, and then that's all people want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So all people want to talk about Tyreek Hill, man, he's fast. And wow, he is. Every time you watch him, you feel the need to say all over again, wow, he's fast.
Right.
But the thing with him, if you watch him last year, he developed as a receiver.
Yeah, so much.
And that's fun to watch. Now, here's the deal. Was he a great route runner? Absolutely not. Was his route tree limited? I wouldn't say it's limited in the sense that they never asked him to run more complicated routes, but it was more rare. And the problem is when you're so good at running go routes and post routes, they're going to keep sending you because it takes the top off the defense.
Of course.
He really did improve in a lot of little things in terms of footwork and in terms of some of the little nuances that you're expected to learn. And what's interesting to me is how much more comfortable he looked as a receiver this last year, which was literally his first years of his life as a full-time wide receiver. And what I found is when he gets his feet right, when he does the things he's supposed to be doing, he's in that Kelce stratosphere where he just can't be covered.
Right.
And so what I wrote about, and again, that's on The Athletic too. I wrote that a few days ago. And when you look at the nuance in some of his routes and you look at some of the things that he's worked on, you can see him improving. He still really needs to improve on false steps, taking too many steps, but he's improved. You can see more and more snaps where he gets it right.
Right.
And it's cool to watch the way that he alters defensive game plans. He and Kelce, again, they're two of the most unique players in the league. And one thing to note with him, one thing that I do is I chart win percentage and loss percentage for receivers, which is essentially, basically what it sounds like. If you're in against man coverage, beating the coverage, or against zone, finding the open zone, you can't be schemed open.
Right.
What I found with Hill is that he was winning, I got 37% of his snaps. It's just worth noting that guys who are veterans like Chris Conley and Albert Wilson, they were around 25, 26%. Hmm. And so despite still needing to work on some of this route running stuff, he's still winning a good percentage of the time. And so his potential is virtually limitless because, again, he had a lot of stuff to work on last year, but he was still such a tough cover when they asked him to do that traditional wide receiver stuff. And they kept asking him to do more and more, and he did well with it.
Do you feel like you have a fuller understanding of what this offense is going to look like after going deeper in on Tyreek Hill and more in on Travis Kelce? Do you feel like there's a plan coming together, or do you feel like you're still waiting on Andy Reid to make those decisions for us?
I am still waiting. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I can write about the Air Reid offense, and I don't think he'd ever do anything that wild, but it wouldn't stun me.
Did you have a percentage for how much they threw the ball last year? Did that come up somewhere, ballpark?
I'm trying to remember what it was. I believe it was in the mid-60s, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
We can work around the
mid to low
60s.
60s.
it's crazy to think that you're going to go from Alex Smith, a guy who you trust to throw the ball every time.
Yeah.
Like, you trust the ball is going to get very, very close to where it needs to be, even sure. if it's not at the most, like, if it's not a firework every time. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you would bring in a rookie, whatever, first-year quarterback guy with one game under his belt and then right. throw the ball more sounds insane. But then you look at the way that you have – the way that you've charted all these things, and the way that you look at all of these weapons and the air read as a concept and everything, and it totally makes sense.
It does, and that's the problem. You know, we're Chiefs fans. We're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right.
We're waiting for the rug to get pulled. Everything. We're waiting for that game one where Mahomes throws six picks and looks like Brock Osweiler, and we're like,
I can't.
We become like, you know, Joe, I've made a terrible mistake, and. So we're waiting on that, but all signs point to the offense being incredible.
Mm-hmm.
What I think we're going to see, I'm guessing, is a lot of what we saw last year, but more. I think we're going to see more of these, in camp. They are working still. You see them working on read option and RPOs. You see them working on similar concepts, but I think you're going to see just more of it. I think mm-hmm. you're going to see something closer to what Mahomes did at Texas Tech.
I like that sentence. Texas Tech Mahomes had a whole lot of good stuff going for him. Partially, it was, you know, like playing Big 12 defenses and stuff. But it was a low interception rate and a high everything good rate. I want to see, I think Andy Reid wants to see a movement in that sort of direction for Pat Mahomes. I really do. And listen, he's going to have a harder time doing all that stuff at a pro level, obviously. Like, that's pretty easy. But if that mindset leads to a more aggressive pass-first offense, we're going to have a great time this year. I don't know if these came out today or not, but the Sports Radio 810 Football Insider magazine just came out. I would tell you where to get them, but I'm honestly not sure. This kind of caught me out by surprise that I'm even mentioning it right now. But you can open it up, and you can go to page... There aren't page numbers. It's great. It is packed with stuff, and it's, like, high quality. And there's a picture of our Lord and Savior Patrick Mahomes in the front, wearing a hoodie, throwing a football. It's wonderful. But flip a few pages in on the staff prediction page. They honestly, what happened is they needed a ninth person, and I was available. So I am the ninth person on this page. But you could roll up and see the AFC West champion. Now I am in, holy bleep. Good company. 8 out of 9 of us have the Chiefs winning the division. And Kevin has the Chargers and then the Chiefs. Being the first wild card team. So I feel so much less special now. I am much less the individual on this than I thought I was going to be. But I actually think this team is winning the division. What was that? What was that?
Should have picked the Broncos.
I'm a little bit of a contrarian just to the point that I like took the Texans in the AFC South and already kind of regret that. I was not about to do something that dumb. But I love so much the idea of moving to a sort of pass-heavy offense that's going to move at a million miles a minute. It could have a bunch of hiccups. It could mean that letting Mahomes throw as often as Seth and I would like for Mahomes to be throwing the ball, that may lead to him turning the ball over at a higher rate than he did at Texas Tech. I don't know. My honest thought... the Chiefs are going to win the division, at least make the playoffs. I'm betting on it. Like, that's my best guess, educated guess. I like it a lot, though. Thank you, Rudy Salazar, for running the show. Thank you, girlfriend Renee, for opening a very loud Coke can earlier. If you missed that, go get the podcast. I'm Josh Briscoe. Talk to you next time. Bye, Mom!